the Ghost Goal Podcast.
The 10 a.m. kickoffs provided plenty of late action as Brighton marched into Old Trafford and walked out 3-1 winners against Manchester United. Manchester City fell behind at West Ham before staging a second-half comeback, and Tottenham left it late against lowly Sheffield United, scoring twice in injury time to turn a loss into a big win. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 423. There's plenty of other action, obviously, but most of it, as I just mentioned, was during that 10 a.m. time slot here in the U.S., 3 p.m. over in England. I think that's where we're going to start today, Javier. I think that's where we have to start, with that Brighton-Manchester United game. But first of all, how are you doing?
Doing well.
From a couple of days at the beach. You managed to join me?
Came up a little bit. Had a couple of days up there. And feeling nice and refreshed now, coming back down to the real world, you know? But I'm definitely missed the footy over the international break. Glad Arsenal got a win. I think it would have been a different weekend if Arsenal had lost. You at least had the Ravens to bounce you back, Alex.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson.
You'd have been depressed.
Saving my weekend for a couple of years now. But yeah, we watched that Brighton-Manchester United game. That was the sort of main one on TV. We had the Manchester City-West Ham game on as well, and sort of monitoring the Tottenham result, and switched over to that once it was clear that Brighton were going to easily beat Manchester United. But what did you make of that poor performance from Manchester United? I know I've got plenty of thoughts on it, but I just want to hear from you first.
So I don't think it was like as bad as people are making it out to be for Manchester United, especially because of the scoreline.
How bad are people making it out to be?
I think people are trying to panic, and I think it was just kind of a bad day at the office. I think they had loads of chances. I actually just didn't realize until I saw today a highlight clip of all the chances Manchester United have against Brighton. And there was at least 7 or 8 times that Marcus Rashford had 1v1s with, like, I think it was like, who was their right back?
Gross. They had Lamptey playing at left back because Estupiñán was injured.
Yeah, it was Gross. And he just went at him over and over and over again and kept getting by him. And they could have had 3 or 4 goals. I mean, there were so many chances. Højlund had chances. Bruno had chances. You know, so many near misses. The attacking display was there. They just didn't get the goals at the crucial times. And Brighton are such a good team now that if you don't take your chances against them, they're going to punish you and they're going to win every time. So I thought it was a good performance from Brighton, and not like a horrific performance from United. I thought, especially the first 20, 30 minutes of that, they kind of dominated Brighton. They had them pinned back. They should have been up 1 or 2 goals in the first 20 minutes. But again, you know, they didn't take advantage of their opportunities. And I think Højlund's going to have to grow. I think he's got a little bit of a heavy touch. You know, he's still nervous. I think he was safe in a few plays. There were a couple times where I thought he maybe could have taken a shot and he just ended up passing it out wide. But, you know, that's going to grow with time, his understanding with his teammates. And I think it's there, like, the signs are there of a team that's not, they're not like, I thought on another day they could have won this game.
I don't know. I agree with you from the standpoint that people are definitely overreacting to that loss. Like, I've seen people suggesting that Erik ten Hag is now on the hot seat and that his job is, you know, like, on the line if they don't immediately turn things around. And, you know, managers can lose their job on, like, a moment's notice for, you know, anything like a really bad loss. Like, if they lose, like, 5 or 6-0 to Bayern Munich in the Champions League this week, I may look like an idiot. But I don't think that's the rational next step for this. I think Ten Hag definitely got some things wrong. Playing that, or packing that midfield with players like Eriksen and McTominay to go alongside Casemiro, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but you just knew they were never going to be able to press this Brighton team consistently without players out wide, you know, forming a more coherent press laterally across the pitch. Brighton could just play it out to one wing. If Man United managed to get over in time to defend that, they could easily go back to, you know, Daoud or Gross in deeper midfield positions or right back and then switch the play out to the opposite side. And it took far too long for Manchester United to adjust and work their way over to that opposite wing. And while United looked okay for the first 20 minutes, once that first goal, the Welbeck goal, which was a beautiful Brighton move, once that went in, you could see all of the belief in the team just kind of drop out. Like, and that's mainly in terms of like their belief in pressing Brighton further up and like dominating the game. Yes, they still created chances. They had that chance that was chalked off for going out of bounds right before halftime. That the game probably would have been very different if Rashford had been able to keep that in and get it to Højlund to score. But it's just the way they capitulate when things don't go their way. There's a lot of comparisons between Manchester United and Chelsea, so I identify with this a lot, even though United are probably in a better spot right now than Chelsea are. I just think those decisions with McTominay, with Eriksen...
Are you regretting your top four, Alex?
Look like, what's that?
Are you regretting your United top four prediction? It kind of sounds because you are right now.
No, because I have full confidence that they will figure it out. But I just think for that one game, that was an incorrect decision. People have been hyping up McTominay because of these Scotland performances. And they just want to pretend that like if that they don't know that there are plenty of players out there who just become a different like animal once they play for their national side. Like, do we not remember Asamoah Gyan? I'm sure there's others that I'm forgetting, like Paulo Guerrero for Peru. You know, these players who are like great for their national teams, but you know, they just don't do it the same when they're, you know, asked to do it week in, week out, or two or three times a week for their club team throughout a league season. McTominay,
Miroslav Klose.
Miroslav Klose.
He's
sure.
Probably the most famous of them.
Sure. Scott McTominay will never be the answer in midfield for Manchester United. They need to get Sofyan Amrabat into the team as soon as possible. They need to get Mason Mount back to full fitness because Eriksen, it just seems like his legs are gone. I'm not just trying to criticize McTominay. It's Eriksen as well. And then there's obviously the very serious issues of, you know, the allegations against Antony, this whole drama with Eric Ten Hag and Jadon Sancho. It's basically cut their wing options down to almost nothing. It's Rashford and that's about it. And Anthony Martial has been given too many chances and has always, you know, underperformed. So things will change. I do believe that. United started last season much worse off than they've started this season, at least from what I remember. And Ten Hag was, you know, able to turn it around. It's going to take something drastic, let me just say, because they still have the defensive injuries that are keeping them from, you know, developing a proper base to press higher up the field. It's hard to press when you have, you know, your left back, your right back, one of your center backs out injured in Varane. And then Lisandro Martinez is asked to do way too much defensively, and it leads to him just getting absolutely sold for the second goal by Pascal Gross. I haven't seen Lisandro Martinez be that bad defensively, and it kind of seemed like a reaction from him to try and make up for other players missing in the rest of that back line. So, you know, they'll be helped by certain players coming back from injury. But they need something different, especially out wide. And they need to abandon that like diamond midfield, because the fact that they packed that midfield so much with McTominay, Eriksen, Casemiro, Bruno Fernandes, and they still got dominated in midfield by Brighton, like that's not a good sign. Like, Daoud and Gross were just like toying with them for most of that game. But it may not be soon. I don't know. I don't know what you think. Are you starting to regret that top four pick?
Not yet. Not yet. I think we got to see a little bit more. I think United had a really difficult start to this season as well. You know, they haven't had easy games. So I think once they come out of this hard run and they've got that easy run of games coming up, you know, they're still not done with their hard run because they have to play Bayern Munich in midweek. And then, you know, the games are going to start easing up for them. So I think they'll be able to rack up some points and some wins and everything will be okay. If they go in through that easy run and they start, you know, dropping points during that, yeah, I'd be a lot more worried.
That easy run, of course, is going to start next weekend away at Burnley, who looked improved today in their draw with Nottingham Forest. So who knows, maybe... Burnley, do you manage to get something from that game? They put up a little bit of a fight against Manchester City in the first game at home. Who knows? That's all I'm saying. Moving on to Manchester City, like I mentioned in the intro, they went down 1-0 against West Ham at the London Stadium over the weekend, a West Ham team that hadn't lost yet this season and had beaten teams like Chelsea and Newcastle. Everything seemed good for West Ham. There was a nice goal with Jared Bowen setting up James Ward-Prowse in the 36th minute. And then right out of halftime, City's new signing, Jeremy Doku, scored a lovely goal with the inside of his right foot. I think only 45 seconds after the second half started. And from there, it was Bernardo Silva and Erling Haaland who got the 3 points for Manchester City. Not too much analysis from this one, but I do just want to, you know, mention Jeremy Doku. It's a very astute signing by Manchester City.
Yeah, that looked like a Leroy Sané goal. I mean, I didn't expect him to be this good this early on. I thought he was going to be more raw, especially from what I saw in the first game. But he looks to have improved a lot even in just, you know, a couple of weeks of training. So impressive from Doku. I think, you know, he's still very young and he can grow into this Manchester City side. And it seems like all of the signings, Mateus Nunez came on. Just City very rarely missed like they did with Calvin Phillips. So it's just, you know, the Pep signings are like 1 out of 10 end up not being good. So yeah, it's just wild, wild stuff from Manchester City, the players that they're developing. Julian Alvarez, I mean, we didn't talk about him, but he had, I think, you know, he had a monstrous performance. He's kind of taken up that mantle of De Bruyne, you know, being gone. They don't necessarily really even need Foden either to be creative because Julian Alvarez is doing, pulling the strings, you know, kind of playing that false nine behind the striker to link up play with Haaland and the rest of the players. It, yeah, just so many different levels that this Manchester City team right now. And I don't know. I don't see a chink in their armor, Alex. I don't really see a way through. I don't really see like a weakness that they have. So unless some injuries happen, you know, they're probably just going to keep winning games. And occasionally might drop a game here and there, but it's just, it's kind of not fun.
Well, I mean, it is fun from the standpoint that Manchester City, that you're always guaranteed goals, because I don't think they've been amazing defensively so far this season. You still can't get at them. And like West Ham still had like a threat, you know, from set pieces and on the counter like they did for their goal. It's at the other end where you just think like, oh, okay, if we score once or twice, City are still going to score 3, 4, 5, you know, so I agree with you. It may not be entertaining from the standpoint of, you know, who else is going to win the league but City? No one. But you do have to sit back and appreciate how, you know, this system that Pep has set up. You can fully expect, like, any new signings, maybe the 1 in 10, like Calvin Phillips that you mentioned, will fail and move on early. But Jeremy Doku, when they signed him, I remember thinking, as long as he stays healthy, that's exactly the kind of player Manchester City need, because they've needed someone who's willing to threaten in behind defenses, not just Haaland. Haaland obviously does it from a central area, but out wide, there's going to be so much space for a player like Doku or Foden to threaten and then obviously eventually work the ball inside for a player like Haaland or Alvarez. I've just been surprised by how quickly Doku's been like fully integrated into the squad. He started both games since he arrived, you know, looked decent at times in the Fulham game before the international break, had like one or two decent crosses, but overall was kind of quiet. And then in this game, he, you know, exploded into life, like set up a sitter for Erling Haaland, and Haaland missed it, missed two sitters in the first half, but eventually got his goal later on. It's a scary but like entertaining signing for Manchester City. And I get it. It's not entertaining for you because your team is, you know, trying to get to where Manchester City is. My team is nowhere near that. So, you know, the only times I get to watch decent football anymore, Javier, is when Manchester City are playing, because my own team can't do it for shit, which we may get to in a little bit. But let's go to Tottenham Sheffield. We managed to watch like the important part of this game. The last 20 minutes, if you will. The Manchester United Brighton game was 3-0 around the 71st minute. Brighton went up 3-0, and we looked at each other and we're like, okay, let's this one's over. Let's switch over to Tottenham Sheffield. And right as we switched over, I literally mean right as we switched over, Sheffield took the lead through that Gustavo Hammer set piece goal that was very well taken by him. And Sheffield were holding on for the rest of the game, and they couldn't do it. A Richarlison set piece corner, the header that he pulled off so well at
Everton. It kind of felt like they were going to do it, and then, you know, that corner came out of nowhere.
It's what we've been talking about with the injury time, though. You know, there's so much injury time added on that, like...
It's hard for these you know, lower table teams that a lot of their strategy in previous years has been, you know, all right, if we can get a goal, you know, we can keep it close, clean sheet, maybe get one goal, and then we can waste time and win that way. It's just that you can't win that way anymore. You know, you can, I guess, but it's just much harder to do so now, you know? So I think the rules change has favored
they could have gotten something
teams
out of
that
it,
attack
though,
more.
Because I'm thinking especially for the winner, Kulusevski's winner. I think it was Robinson, one of the defenders in it was Amihadzic in Sheffield's back line, gave the ball away completely needlessly, trying to play out from the back. It was already 1-1. Tottenham were, you know, fully pinning Sheffield United in, gunning for the winner. And Amihadzic, I think it was, plays a ball like on the ground out to the right wing back, who, you know, I think it was Udogi, came up behind him, won the ball back, or Perisic. And immediately, you know, started from the counter press what became an easy winner. Like, it was just bing, bang, boom, one or two passes. Kulusevski has someone, you know, trying to block him, but they didn't really get anywhere close, and he's able to finish to get the winner. If instead you're just, like, hoofing that forward into Tottenham's half, you know, maybe Tottenham don't get as good of a chance as Kulusevski ended up getting, and it does end 1-1, which would have been huge for Sheffield. I know it still would have been somewhat disappointing, considering that they had the lead for, you know, the 71st minute up until injury time. But it would have been a point against the Tottenham team that started this season very, very well. And I have to give a shout out to a friend of the pod, Mark Sakaili, who's joined us on Instagram Lives plenty of times for London derbies. And he managed to go to his first Tottenham game. He is a Tottenham fan. I don't know if I mentioned that. And what a game to pick. I mean, a whole lot of frustration. I did ask him for a voice memo, but I haven't received that yet. I'm guessing he's busy on his trip to the UK. But what a game to pick, Javier. You know,
yeah, that must have been amazing to be at.
Stress to complete, like, adulation.
Yeah, that must have been awesome to watch. And that's typical Spurs, you know, since last season. They were the team that, you know, you'd see them losing the entire game, and then the last 10, 15 minutes, I feel like they had the most comebacks last year. So continuing on that theme this year, you know, you can never really count Tottenham out until the end, because they seem to have it in them to find goals at the end of games. I don't know how. Usually it was Harry Kane, but, you know, they found it from other sources here, which is what we were talking about earlier, that they have goals throughout the team. They don't necessarily need their number nine to score, you know. So they've got players like Richarlison coming in off the bench, Kulusevski, you know, scoring goals, and
Brendan Johnson came in and had a huge impact.
Brendan Johnson
looked
really good. Yeah, he looked really, really good off the bat. Already, you know, probably going to be one of the best players on the pitch. You know, and they had off days from players like Heung-Min Son and James Maddison, but still got getting the win. That's big.
What do we want to hit on next, Javier? I feel like I know what you're going to say, but yeah, get it out of the way. How did you feel about Arsenal's 1-0 win at Everton on Sunday?
Not much to say, Alex. Routine, right? No, I mean, I have
a
lot to say.
I actually came out of this thinking, like, much higher of Everton than I did before. Like, it was a sign of life from Everton. They defended excellently. We were talking about it. We were there watching it together. I'm not saying they should have won or gotten a draw.
They defended very well.
I'm just saying I expected them to get destroyed by you guys. And they defended excellently for most of the game. And they succumbed to a Leandro Trossard screamer in the 69th minute. Giggity. So, I mean, obviously good for Arsenal to get an away win on a ground that they've struggled at.
Let me just break it down real quick, Alex. I liked no Havertz, David Raya starting. I think that was awesome, too. I think that was the ruthlessness that I've been asking for from Arteta. Didn't want to see him keep playing his little pet, Havertz. I didn't want to see him. And honestly, the Ramsdale, I thought Ramsdale had been underperforming. So the fact that he dropped him already in the Premier League, to me, that shows that, like, you know, that if you're not performing in this team, you're going to get dropped and you're not going to get the game time. And I think it can only be a good thing. You know, I thought Gabriel Jesus, I want him starting soon. I thought Nketiah was pretty underwhelming, and the game changed a lot once Jesus came on. You know, very unfortunate injury for Martinelli there. Hopefully he's not out for too long, but we do have a lot of capable replacements, and Reece Nelson, you know, Trossard, Smith Rowe, Kai Havertz. So there's a lot of players you can play out in the left wing, and we won't probably suffer too much. So Declan Rice, again, fantastic performance. He seems to be the type of player that just doesn't have a bad day at the office, really. I mean,
yeah, I feel like even when he was 18 or 19 breaking into the West Ham team as a center back, he was already at that age a player that would get have a 7 out of 10 performance pretty much every game.
But and I mean, it's kind of wild to do that obviously. In a new team, going to a new environment, and then just hitting the ground running as much as he has, as quick as he has, so seamless in our midfield. It's almost as if, it's just you would have never thought in the last couple of seasons that without Thomas Partey, you know, you could see this team, flawlessly still keeping possession and move going through the motions offensively. I think we still do suffer a little bit offensively without having Partey in midfield. I think he plays the ball, better in between the lines for our wingers. But I think Rice can get there. I think Rice can get there. I think Rice is still playing a little bit safe.
I don't think there's a single facet of the game where Thomas Partey is better than Declan Rice. Declan Rice has been better than Thomas Partey for a good 2 years now. He's been playing in a team where, at West Ham, where they haven't had as much as possession out of necessity. If anything, this is probably like a walk in the park to Declan Rice. I don't think it's a tough transition at all. His team has the ball 80% of the game now. He has to defend a couple of counterattacks and, bully a midfielder like Amadou Onana. And then he's, got all the time in the world to play passes through to the forwards. And
I was happy how good we were defensively, Alex. We gave them no chances. Pretty much not a sniff the whole game. So I think it was like a pretty comprehensive 1-0 win, as far as you can say that. Just never really... Raya didn't really have to do anything, but his distribution was still good. So, was still... fairly happy with his also on corners. He came out and snatched every single one, every set piece. He just seems a little bit more assured than Ramsdale right now. Ramsdale still, he's got 4 or 5 years on Ramsdale, so he's further along in his career, and it might just be the right time for someone like Raya right now, and it might not be Ramsdale's time just yet. But I think he'll still get plenty of game time. We've got a bunch of cup competitions, and it's not like I've given up on Ramsdale. I just think it's the right time to bench him.
I don't usually do this because I usually save it for the end, but I feel like the end of the pod has now been, taken over by your fantasy segment. Let's do our way too early previews right now, because there's one game next weekend that absolutely, jumps off the fixture list, and it's obviously the North London Derby, Sunday at 9 a.m. We just talked about Tottenham. We just talked about Arsenal. Arsenal will be hosting Tottenham in that one. But by the way, a very busy 9 a.m. slate. All of the interesting games I saw for this weekend were part of that 9 a.m. slate on Sunday. How are you feeling going into this North London derby with Tottenham obviously having, just as good of a start to the season as Arsenal? You do usually win at the Emirates against Tottenham. But are you feeling a little nervous at all? Any nerves whatsoever creeping in as this North London derby approaches?
No nerves. I mean, I do think we're going to win. I think that the fact that we've done the double over them last season so comprehensively was, I think it might affect them a little bit coming into this season. I expect them to not necessarily play as marauding as they have been in some of these other games. And if they do, I think they'll get torn to shreds. No, I think they'll be more cautious. Okay, so
that's why I think you guys are definitely going to beat them at least 3-1, maybe 4-1, is because Ange Postecoglou is extremely committed to that style of play.
I thought they might play more cautious and it might be a closer game, but if they try to attack us, like they've done every game this season, I don't anticipate it going well for them.
Well, we'll see from the lineup choice, I guess. If Postecoglou decides to bring Brennan Johnson into the starting lineup with Son and Kulusevski up front.
Definitely put Brennan Johnson in the starting... Brennan Johnson tears us to shreds. The man is made to play against Arsenal. He just loves a game against us.
If you see that front three with Madison sitting behind them and then Sarr and Basuma as the two defensive midfield options, I don't know how successful Tottenham will be at keeping the ball and trying to play like a high pressing style like they have been so far. But when they do eventually win it back, they'll have four very quick, very skillful players in their front line that will, in their minds, they will be able to combine and, you know, get at that Arsenal defense a little bit. And I'm sure they'll be looking to try and score early, try and punch you in the mouth a little bit.
The other thing, Alex, is we went back to a back four.
Goals against Arsenal, like, very early in games, and Arsenal have
we were playing Ben
White
again at right back. Gabriel was back at left back. The balance was restored, Alex. Once I saw that, it felt so much better. I think the formation changed at the beginning of the season.
You guys haven't played a back four in, you know, a year.
It's basically been a back four.
It's three at the back. Gabriel left center back, Saliba middle, and then Ben White right center back with Rice and Zinchenko.
But White wasn't really playing right center back this time. He was getting down the wing a lot more. He was kind of playing that same. It was a lot more like the formation from last season.
Right, which was usually a three at the back with. I mean, White can play at the right center back spot and then push forward when.
But so far this season, for the most part, we've been playing with like a right back who's been inverted. Well, I guess that's because Zinchenko hadn't been fit
before Partey was taken out of the team.
So it was nice to kind of see us go back to the old style of, you know, Zinchenko being the inverted player and Ben White being able to go actually get, you know, space to run down the wing. And I think if we, you know, improve on that style again, I think it'll be very effective. And I think we saw a lot of that against Manchester United and, you know, again in this game against Everton, just the control we had away from home. I mean, I don't remember the last time, you know, an Arsenal team, obviously last season we did this as well, but, you know, in seasons past, we go away from home. You know, you always remember Arsenal giving up loads of chances or looking rocky or having, you know, moments in the game where they'd start choking. It just didn't happen in this game in a ground where we hadn't won in 5 years. And that's a great sign for me. That's why I think we're going to win the Tottenham game, because I think we have a lot of momentum from that Everton win. A lot of momentum, like kind of like hidden momentum that a lot of the players will take belief from that game, you know, more than any of the other wins. Probably the United game is huge too, obviously, but I think these last two wins really are going to like push us into a run.
What are you more excited for? Arsenal's return to the Champions League on Wednesday when they host PSV, or Tottenham on the weekend?
It's got to be the Champions League game, Alex. It's been seven, eight years since Arsenal last went to the Champions League. And I mean, I'm taking off a couple hours of PTO so that I can watch this game properly, you know, not be looking at my phone or trying to watch it on a stream. You know, I can't miss our first Champions League game in 7 years here. And I think it's going to be a good one, man.
Welcome to the white collar world. You can get paid to watch your favorite team.
Nice.
I mean, you're using PTO, so it's not, you know, actually, but you are getting paid to watch Arsenal. That should be an entertaining game. If there's a little bit of rotation from Arsenal, you should still, you know, score and beat PSV, but PSV are no slouches themselves. It'll be high scoring, I would think. Well, I've been putting it off for 30 minutes almost now, but we should probably get to Chelsea's disappointing 0-0 draw at Bournemouth a little bit earlier on Sunday. Where to start with this one? I'll sum it up in just like a sentence or two. We've mentioned the injuries for Chelsea plenty of times, but it just felt like after the first 20 to 30 minutes where Chelsea created like one or two
That's
solid
a lot more
chances,
than one or two sentences, Alex. You were at your quota like probably
I just finished the first sentence. There were commas involved. You know, they break the sentence up. Do I need to go into a grammar lesson?
There seemed to be some periods earlier.
The great thing about this is, now it's more than two sentences. So congratulations. You achieved your goal, Javier. You made it longer than two sentences. I'll jump back in and just say, after the first 20 to 30 minutes of the game where Chelsea had solid chances, only one or two, but solid chances, namely Conor Gallagher's chance that he put right at Neto, the keeper. When we didn't take those first couple of chances, I really lost my hope of winning that game, because when you look at the bench for Chelsea right now, the best attacking option we had that, you know, wasn't injured was Cole Palmer. And he came on and he looked okay. He's young. He's still getting used to a new team and not playing in a juggernaut of a team like Manchester City. But we just don't have... We don't have the players at any level in the Premier League right now to, you know, come on and change the game in a positive way for us and win the game. So a 0-0, all things considered, probably ended up being like the best we could have hoped for. I don't know what you make of that. That's obviously, it's not a good thing. I'm not going to say like, oh, thank God we got a 0-0 draw. It was still disappointing. But it felt like it was more likely that Bournemouth were going to get a winner, bringing on players like Sinisterra and David Brooks.
It was kind of wild, Alex, that after you spent $450 million this summer, $500 million in January, you still had you had less players on the bench, like you said, that could change a game than Bournemouth did. It's kind of wild. I know Chelsea are very injured. How many of those players are injured
that should have been there? You know, Nkunku would usually be starting.
It does feel like Chelsea are still a little bit, you know, in chaos mode a little bit in terms of the club still hasn't settled down from all these moves. You know, the starting 11 keeps changing. Players who are fit week in and week out are changing. And until Chelsea can settle down and you guys can get into, like, you know, mostly fit squad, you know, pretty much, you know what the starting 11 is going to be. And at least there we kind of, you know that, but it hasn't been good. So I think he's going to have to make changes. I don't think you can keep trotting out Raheem Sterling. I think too much, you know, during that Luton game, Raheem was great, gets, you know, a brace or whatever. I think that was more how shit Luton are and how terrible they are defensively than, you know, how good Raheem Sterling is. I think the next two games have been a testament to, you know, if you put everything on Raheem offensively, he's just not good enough. He's just not the player. If you ask him to be your main offensive outlet, he's just not going to be it. And Nico Jackson missed, you know, some sitters last week or 2 weeks ago. This game, I thought he had his worst game in a Chelsea shirt. I thought he was, you know, just not that great offensively. Wasn't very
kind
good.
Kind of invisible.
He had one shot
from distance that hit the post. But other than
it was also very telling that, you know, some of the earlier games he was making runs and they were trying to pass balls into him. A lot of his teammates were just kind of ignoring his runs now, and he was getting frustrated. And it just, you know, it doesn't seem like it's clicking for Chelsea at the moment. And I feel like there's going to have to be changes made. I also just wasn't impressed with Mikhaila Mudryk, Alex.
Really? Because I thought that was his best game this season.
Yeah, I thought for the first 15, 20 minutes he was good.
He set up the Conor Gallagher chance with like a nice like dinked ball in from the left wing. He's actually one of the few bright spots from that game, and I would want him to keep starting at left wing. Maybe, and this is going to sound crazy, maybe move Colwill from the left back spot he's basically been playing instead of Chilwell into a left center back spot and bench one of Disasi or Thiago Silva and have Chilwell play left back with Mudryk at left wing. I know everyone wants to do this, you know, like Potter was like one of the things people liked about Potter was that he wants to do all this positionless football. But I think right now we just need stability and for everyone to know what their role is in a much more basic way. And this isn't a criticism of Pochettino. I think he'll come to this conclusion himself eventually, but he needs to make some tough decisions and leave maybe like a senior player like Thiago Silva out so that we can, you know, play a back four, free up some of those forward players from the demands of having to, you know, track back all the time and let them just focus on scoring goals. Because right now we seem scared to shoot at times. There were multiple chances where, you know, you think like Nico Jackson could just open his body up and shoot, or Cole Palmer right at the end could have just opened himself up and shot with his left foot to the bottom left corner.
I think what's worrying for me, though, Alex, is this was your easiest run of the season. It only gets harder from here. I mean, you needed to rack up some wins in these games. I know you got the win against Luton, but it hasn't been enough. So,
yeah, I mean, good enough would have been
a couple. You have three more like, quote unquote easy games coming up. You know, from this 8-game run that you guys had to start the season, where, you know, 7 out of 8 of the games were relatively easy. After that, you have a insanely difficult run coming up in the Premier League. So I feel like these next three games are kind of do or die time for Chelsea in terms of you got to start picking up some points. I know that Villa, you think, you know, again, a way too early preview, Sunday 9 a.m. What do you think is going to happen in this game, Alex? I mean, I think you guys can get something out of it. I know that
Villa
you're not super
win.
Confident.
Villa are going to win. It's going to be exactly like last season when Potter got fired. We're going to have 70% of possession. Aston Villa are going to hit us on the counter once or twice. And even though they have European football and they're going to be busy on Thursday night with Europa Conference League.
Yeah, I think that could affect
them. They're still going to come to Stamford Bridge and they're going to beat us.
I think you guys are going to have the edge on that one. I think you guys might tire them out, and I could see you guys, you know, scoring a couple goals in the second half and winning this game 2-1. So I'll say Chelsea get a win and surprise people.
We haven't scored with our last like 32 shots. We've had 32 shots since the last time we scored.
It's got to give at some point. I mean, you've got
Not against Villa. Maybe in the Burnley game away after that.
I don't think Villa are that good defensively. I mean, I think it could be like 2-2, but I do think that the Thursday game is going to affect them, and it's going to take them, you know, a couple of these Thursday games before they actually get in the groove of being able to play a Thursday game and then play again on Sunday. So I'm not so confident that it's just going to be, you know, a walk in the park for them after having a midweek game and you guys not having the midweek game. I think that the way that Chelsea have held the ball so far this season, I think at some point it's going to come good for you. You know, I've seen this style of play.
I hope you're right, man. I really do.
I've seen the style of play come good. It just it takes a while.
Without Nkunku, I just don't know who's going to score the goals.
Maybe a Cole Palmer start.
Maybe. To close us out, give us your weekly fantasy. You need to come up with a name for this, dude, because your fantasy segment, it's not catchy. Give me something quick and snazzy and catchy that we can like throw out at the end and people are like, yes, Javier's picks for fantasy. But go ahead, give us your players that you're keeping an eye on for Fantasy Premier League this weekend and beyond.
So a lot of the big hitters didn't hit last week. You know, I did bring in
Erling Haaland. Did
he did he did Alex, and I may not have captained Erling Haaland in fantasy, and captain Son. I regret this. So shows how much I know in fantasy. But you know, I got lucky because Haaland could have easily had a hat trick. But there is a player that, you know, I think a lot of people have not really had on their radar at all. And that's one that he scored this weekend. It's another City player, Jeremy Doku, Alex. You talked about him earlier. He's 6.5 mil, midfielder. It kind of feels like he might get a lot of game time for City this season, especially in the league. So if we do see him, he's already started his first two games, which is a pretty good sign, right? And if he's anything close to the player that we saw in this last game for Manchester City versus a pretty good West Ham team, like you said, he had a couple of very good balls across the box to Haaland. Haaland should have had he should have had a couple of assists and probably a goal in this game, and we'd be, you know, everyone would be wanting to bring him in fantasy. I think he you know, a little bit under the radar, beautiful goal, only 6.5 mil. I'd bring him in. There's a couple defenders, Alex, that I want to talk about. 4.5 mil cheap defenders that I'm definitely going to be bringing these guys into my team in the next couple of game weeks. Sven Botman, 4.5 mil. Got to get into Newcastle defensively right now. They've got a run coming up of Sheffield United, Burnley, West Ham, Palace, Wolves. You know, you got to think that they're going to pick up a lot of clean sheets during that run. They had a really hard start to the season. So I'd look at, you know, both Sven Botman at 4.5 mil and Kieran Trippier at 6 mil. Two Newcastle defenders who I'm, you know, definitely going to be getting at least one into my team, maybe both. Even Nick Pope, I think he's probably one of the best options at goalie right now. Again, he has a very good run coming up. And then the other 4.5 mil defender, Alex. I can't believe this guy's 4.5 mil. I think you remember him as also being a monster in fantasy in previous seasons. Lucas Digne. You know, for Aston Villa, he's now playing for Villa. You know, in previous seasons on Everton, he was a monster. You know, he's gotten already 3 assists this year. So pretty crazy, you know, 3 assists in the first 5 games. No other defender's gotten 3 assists. Previous seasons, this dude's gotten like 8 goals and 5 assists or something from wingback. So, you know, definitely one to watch. So even when there's no clean sheets for Villa, which they haven't had many this year, they've had, what, I think 1? He's still gotten returns because of the assists, so he's won 4.5 mil, definitely going to be going up in price. Only 3.9% of people own him. And, you know, I think Villa also have a great run of games these next 10 games or so. You know, a lot of bottom
Chelsea,
half of the table
Chelsea
teams.
Can't score right now. And even at Stamford Bridge, like, you're saying we could still beat them, but I would not be surprised if you bring in Digne for that price. He could get a clean sheet plus an assist. Who knows? But I do have to add a disclaimer for him. I think he officially reached injury-prone status like way earlier in his Everton days. So if he ends up playing in that Thursday game, like I'd say hold off until maybe like Thursday night, Friday, to see how, you know, the tea leaves fall. Because if you bring him in, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and he plays in the Europa Conference League for Villa, gets injured, and now you've just wasted a transfer on a player who's already, we know, is injury prone, you're going to be kicking yourself. So yeah, definitely keep an eye on him. But if things are working out going into the weekend, Friday and Saturday, bring him in. You'll probably do well against Chelsea this weekend and beyond.
In case it wasn't obvious as well, get rid of Chelsea players. You know, there's really only one Chelsea player which you want to keep. Malo Gusto, 4.2 mil. He seems to be one that you can just keep in your team because he's so cheap. But I would get rid of all other Chelsea players. And the last player I want to talk about, Alex, Pedro Neto. He seems to be the only attacking outlet for Wolves. He was very, very good against Liverpool. Could have easily had a goal and probably a couple more assists. Neto already has 4 assists in the first 5 games. You know, he's looked really, really good, even though there hasn't been very many good results for Wolves. Wolves do play Luton next, and you better believe Neto's going to have a great time. I could see him getting a heavy haul in that game. So whoever plays against Luton, you always got to look at their best attacking player.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Let's wrap things up there, Javier. Thank you again for jumping on the pod with me this beautiful Monday night, and for a solid weekend in Ocean City, enjoying the football. And good luck to Arsenal. I don't usually wish you good luck, but you know, 7 or 8 years out of the Champions League is a long time. So enjoy yourself on Wednesday. I'm sure it will be very special to hear that anthem ringing out around the Emirates again.
It's been a long time. I almost forgot what it was like.
Almost. If you want to follow Javier on Twitter, you can follow him at JavierRev9. If you want to see pictures of him being sad about captaining Son instead of Haaland. If you want to follow me on Twitter or Instagram, you can follow me at ASMoss92. And the podcast socials are at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy the Champions League and Premier League games in the next week. And until next time, see you.